tonight on Straight Talk.
Wildlife is clearly a priority for legislators. We get that. But we implore you to find a solution that does not result in harm to an already hurting industry.
A new proposal to raise Oregon's lodging tax sparks pushback and questions about what it could mean for tourism.
What you're talking about now is diverting a dedicated source of revenue for economic development to something else that has nothing to do with economic development and job creation.
Plus, hunger is on the rise in Oregon and Southwest Washington. In fact, we've been in record territory in terms of the need for help.
Over the last 2 years alone, we saw a 51% increase in visits to our food sites across the state.
We talked to the president of the Oregon Food Bank about what's driving the need and how you can help, which includes the KGW Great Food Drive.
It really takes all of us to come together to address hunger in our communities.
That's all ahead on Straight Talk. Hello, I'm Tim Gordon, and welcome to Straight Talk. In focus today, House Bill 4134, or the 1.25% for wildlife bill, now making its way through the legislature in Salem. The bill would raise Oregon's transient lodging tax to fund wildlife and conservation. Last month, we talked with advocates of the bill, who told us Oregon desperately needs dedicated funding to protect the more than 300 species at risk, and that investing in Oregon's natural beauty also supports tourism. But the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association is pushing back, warning this tax hike would hurt an industry still recovering. And joining us today, the president and CEO of the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, Jason Brandt, joined the association in 2015. Prior to that, he served as the CEO of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce. And Jason, thanks so much for being with us here on Straight Talk today.
Yeah, great to be here, Tim.
You bet. And you know, it's a critical time right now because as of this taping, which is early Wednesday afternoon, this House bill, 4134, passed through the House. It's out of the Senate committees. And now it's on the floor, getting a third reading and an expected vote today. What do you think will happen?
I think it's possible that it will pass 18 to 12, which is the exact amount of votes they would need to send it to the governor's desk for consideration. So we're watching it very closely. Our team is in the Capitol every day and doing everything we possibly can to share the facts of the reality facing Oregon's economy before we increase taxes yet again.
Well, proponents of this legislation call it a bipartisan effort to protect and help wildlife and habitats in Oregon by raising the statewide lodging tax by 1.25%. And they claim it has broad support in the state. The Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association obviously does not support it. Tell us why and tell us more.
Yeah, no surprise that there's broad-based support. And let me explain why. I mean, the history of this tax is one of Oregon's brightest success stories. We've had it now for 23 years, so it passed in the 2003 Oregon legislative sessions, known as the Oregon Tourism Investment Proposal. And at that time, we created the Oregon Tourism Commission, a bipartisan effort to create a sales tax on ourselves as lodging operators to fully fund Travel Oregon and bring our identity and our brand to domestic and international audiences. So in the last 23 years, we've over doubled visitor spending, we've nearly tripled state and local tax revenue, and we've created 35,000 direct jobs. So it's no surprise to us that everyone else out there that hasn't had access to this money now wants in. They want to piggyback on that success story for all these other things that may have merit, may be important to all of us as Oregonians, but we question the vehicle that's being used to fund those new services for all these new state agencies.
And visitors and tourism is a really big part of Oregon's economy, no doubt about it.
Absolutely. Every dollar we spend that we send out provides an incredible return on investment for Oregonians as a whole, for the workers in our hotels and our restaurants, for the broader retail industry. Every time we send that dollar out, we're working to create a multiplier effect that pays dividends back to the state. So that has been our focus for 23 years, and rightly so. We have questions about what happens if we start opening up this dedicated economic development revenue stream for all these new state agencies that aren't doing that same function. They're not sending that dollar out to create a multiplier effect of dollars back.
Hey, well, this debate is a pretty hot one in Salem for sure, and you and others on the business side, the Portland Metro Chamber in particular, are crying foul over some of the information released by the Oregon Conservation Network a group of a lot of different agents or nonprofits, I think, claiming it's misleading, that information, some of it at least. What specifically is the problem there?
Yeah, the hats off to the Portland Metro Chamber for really digging in. They have a multi-page rebuttal to a two-page document that was created by the Oregon Conservation Network. But we have serious concerns about misinformation that has really cast, I think, a lot of maybe unjust confidence in the rationale for passing this tax, because frankly, the document includes a lot of information about other state taxes. We have our suspicions about AI being used to create the document. Any legislator that actually clicks on the sources and the links associated with the Oregon Conservation Network document would not find the information backed up that the document is portraying to be the truth about our industry. So it's, I think, a great opportunity for investigative journalism, and to date, they have not responded to current media outreach asking why there was so much misinformation in the documents that they provided to legislators. So I have some concerns about just the good governance protocol and making sure that the information our legislators have is fact-checked and accurate before they're making these massive decisions for all of us as Oregonians.
You think it's affected the debate over this?
Absolutely. Anyone that's not in our industry and doesn't have a command of the issues or the reality of the headwinds facing Oregon's tourism industry would look at a document like this and say, oh, 1.25%, that's no big deal. That's a negligible increase. The reality is this nearly doubles our statewide lodging tax in this state. And the last thing we need are media headlines across the country and maybe even in the nation saying Oregon's nearly doubling its statewide lodging tax. That's not exactly the signal we want to send as we continue to recover here in the state of Oregon.
Sure. Let's talk about where it stands right now. The current statewide lodging tax is 1.5%. That's the statewide tax, which is one of the lowest in the country. Some would argue it is the lowest if you take into account sales taxes in other states. But of the 48 states that collect a lodging tax like this, it is one of the very lowest. Why do you think it will push visitors away?
And there's a case in point on some of the misinformation. So actually 18 states don't even have a statewide lodging tax. So these are the types of facts that I think we need to equip our legislators with. And we hope the governor takes the opportunity to look very closely at this before signing any legislation, given the extent of the misinformation that has been involved in the legislative process to date.
Okay. What is the breakdown on who pays this lodging tax that currently raises, I believe, $43 million annually? We think of tourists coming in from out of state, but it's a bigger picture than that.
Yeah, so $38 million tax increase if this were to pass. So to your point, about $43, $44 million in the current system. All of that money goes to fund Travel Oregon and the work of the Oregon Tourism Commission to send those dollars out of our state to create those multiplier effects. So this 1.25% increase is better defined as a $38 million tax hike. $11 million of that $38 million would be paid by all of us as Oregonians traveling within our state. So our concerns have very little to do with folks like yourself and I that travel with our family to enjoy the amazing things that Oregon has to offer, enjoy our wildlife, enjoy all the other things that exist in this state. It has more to do with conference travel, business-to-business travel. Mm-hmm. All of those dollars that we may lose out on once we increase this rate, given how competitive it is locating conferences across the country.
Can you also talk about the fact that there are local lodging taxes as well that add on to the state lodging tax?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're sitting here talking about a 1.25% increase, but it's important to understand that Portland as a whole stands at 16%. That's the total tax you pay right now. So we would be going from 16 to 17.25% to stay here in Portland or locate your conference here in Portland. So you imagine if you're in the business of being a meeting planner and you're trying to decide where you want to locate your conference. Well, 16 to 17.25% in this fiercely competitive market moves Portland to the second most expensive place in the entire West Coast to locate a conference. Not exactly the message we want to be saying when we're trying to help our small businesses recover in this state.
Okay. Although the statewide lodging tax has not been used this way before, proponents say that it really does make sense because protecting our environment, our natural areas, which are a big draw for visitors, is really affecting tourism and is important and connected in that way.
Yeah, natural resources are a draw. There are many reasons people travel to Oregon or travel throughout Oregon as citizens themselves to this great state. No doubt about it, that's for sure. But when it comes to why this vehicle was set up, its specific laser-like focus to create that brand and identity, once we open this door to five new state agencies, we will never be able to shut it again. And it's not like natural resources aren't funded currently. There's many revenue streams that are in place for other state agencies. They've just had to go to the general fund for the state of Oregon to get those resources and have them allocated. So we're basically creating a mini general fund through the statewide lodging tax, if you want to put it that way, by allowing five new agencies to piggyback on the resource that has been meant for Travel Oregon.
And my last question was going to be, where do you think the money should come from? But it sounds like you're saying it's already there.
Well, the interesting thing in this whole conversation that I am just befuddled by is that as we move through the legislative process, the general fund will have an ending balance of $200 million. $200 million, and this is a $38 million tax hike. So why, if we care about our natural resources, wouldn't we prioritize that with the ending fund balance available in the general fund as it's always been funded? We can help our farmers and our ranchers. We can help with these natural resource investments. Plus, the state has over $3 billion in reserve funding for their general fund.
All right. Well, we got to leave it there. We are out of time. Thank you so much, Jason Brandt, leader of the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. And we'll see where this goes soon with a vote.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tim.
Thanks, Jason. We're going to take a short break now, and up next, the Oregon Food Bank joins us to talk about the big need for donations just as the KGW Great Food Drive kicks off. Stay with us. Welcome back. It is March, and for the 23rd year, the KGW Great Food Drive is underway. And the need is huge right now when so many things, including the basic necessity of food, cost more, with so many families and individuals trying to survive on less. The Oregon Food Bank leads a network of 21 regional food banks and more than 1,400 sites where anyone can receive free, nutritious food. It's an enormous operation. And leading the Oregon Food Bank is its president, Andrea Williams. Williams was appointed to the role in October of 2024 after co-leading Oregon Food Bank as VP for 3 years. Before that, Williams held leadership roles at CASA, a leading immigrant rights organization, and Portland's Office of Community and Civic Life. Andrea Williams is here, and thank you so much for joining us here. As we talk about this important topic, and also as we partner with Oregon Food Bank on the KGW Great Food Drive.
We so value your partnership. Great. Thanks for having me here.
Of course, and we will get to that. But let's start with what's going on in our state. Your State of the Hunger report is out for Oregon, out recently, showing startling results. What does it tell you, and what did you find?
Yeah, so our most recent report, which we publish each year, shows that hunger is dramatically rising in Oregon and Southwest Washington. And in just 2 years, visits to Oregon Food Bank's network rose by 51%.
Wow.
So when we think in real terms about what that looks like, it's 2.9 million visits coming to our food pantries across the state. So when you think, many people think about the pandemic being a peak time for people visiting food banks. And certainly we were seeing a rise in hunger then. But at that point in time, it was around 1.8 million visits. So at nearly 3 million visits just last year, we are seeing a spike in the number of families and senior citizens coming to visit us.
Yeah, 2026 now, and we're in record territory. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think there's a lot of different drivers of hunger, but we all saw last fall when SNAP was delayed due to the government shutdown, the immediate impact that that had on Oregon families. We have over 700,000 Oregonians who rely on SNAP, which is right that Oregon Trail card that gets uploaded with money each month to go to the grocery store to purchase nutritious foods, suddenly was delayed, right? And because of federal laws like the one Congress passed last year, H.R. 1, we're going to see that program, SNAP, which is our nation's most effective anti-hunger program, start to reduce over the next few years. And so about 30,000 Oregon households will see less SNAP benefits on their cards moving forward. And so we are worried about the impact that this is going to have on our food pantries, who are increasingly seeing more people, and on the families that rely on these types of benefits.
Yeah, and these families are often working families that
yes.
just can't afford to feed themselves well in our current situation.
That's right. So, you know, as president of Oregon Food Bank, I make it a habit to go and visit our pantries across the state. Last fall, I was in southern Oregon in Klamath Falls, and there is where I saw the line extremely long, first of all. Second of all, who did I see in that line? It was our senior citizens, and it was families with young kids. Literally lining up with their little small ones, right? I've got a three-year-old at home and a six-year-old as well. So whenever I see those young families at the pantry line, my heart really goes out to them, thinking about all the expenses that they're trying to keep up with, trying to keep their children fed. And so those are the types of people we're seeing at the pantries, and the same ones that are going to start seeing less benefits on their SNAP cards moving forward. And so it is really policy choices that are driving the numbers of people that we are seeing come to our food banks.
Yeah, and it's so important to hear about the people, because statistics are one thing, but this is affecting a lot of Oregonians and their families right now.
That's right. It's people, and so many people are in survival mode because of rising costs of living, inflation, and then on top of that, we're seeing a divestment from our social safety net programs by our federal government.
What's this mean for the Oregon Food Bank? You must be busier than ever.
Yeah, well, I'm just so thankful and so proud of the community we have in Oregon. Anytime there's a crisis, we see Oregonians step up to the plate. So we saw 15,000 volunteers come through our doors last year, contributing 90,000 hours. And that is just so essential to the work that we do. It allows us to distribute. Last year, we distributed 98 million meals across the state.
Wow.
That's 117 million pounds of food. That is so much food. It's massive. We are doing absolutely everything we can to keep people fed, and we will continue to do that, and we invite Oregonians to join us. And at the same time, the reality is we know it's not going to be enough. We need systems change, like policy changes, both at the federal level and at the state level, to reduce the need, reduce the reasons why people need to come to food banks in the first place. And those types of solutions include everything from making sure rent is affordable, to making sure people have health care, to making sure that social safety net benefits like SNAP are protected.
You mentioned SNAP benefits for sure. Cuts to Medicaid also affecting families and their budgets, and that can't help out either.
That's right. I mean, when you think about it, like I think of my mother-in-law who's on Social Security disability. She gets $1,200 a month, and that's it. She's not able to work, and $900 of that goes to rent. And then the rest, it's like, goes to what? Groceries, gas, your health insurance, utilities. There's only so much to work with. So when people start to see the erosion of these long-term benefits that we've had for so many years, like SNAP's been around for 50 years. Right. When we start to see that eroded, it means that individuals start to see pressure points. And so they're making decisions like, do I replace, you know, the tires on my car, or do I pay for food? Do I pay for that energy bill, or do I delay that so that I can pay for my medication? Yeah. These are the types of decisions we're seeing people make every day.
Andrea, hunger is hitting immigrants and refugees really hard. And we should also add that in those communities, there are those without legal citizenship status, and there's fear about immigration enforcement. How does that all play into the need for food for these folks?
That's a really great question. And unfortunately, going back to the federal law that was passed last year, H.R. 1, it took away immediately 3,000 refugees and humanitarian immigrants their access to SNAP. So suddenly they lost $400 a month.
Here in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. $400 a month immediately, starting last fall. Mm. And so it's making it worse, right? And on top of that, what we're seeing at our food pantries is that because of fear, like regardless of your immigration status, what's happening is that people are getting racially profiled. So you could be a U.S. citizen or a legal permanent resident or, you know, have legal presence, mm-hmm. but immigration enforcement looks at you and thinks, I need to stop you and question you.
Right.
That alone is creating this level of fear in our communities that is reducing people's willingness to come to food pantries. Mm-hmm. to interact with communities. We're seeing it in the schools, we're seeing it at our food pantries. And so Oregon Food Bank is thinking about, well, what are the creative ways that we can make sure that food continues to flow to those families?
To get it to them if they can't get to you.
Because we're all about food access. So how do, we are looking at ways to deliver food boxes to families, to work around the fear that families are feeling, because ultimately we want to make sure everyone is fed.
Right.
Everyone deserves to eat. And our communities are going to be stronger when everyone has food.
Yeah.
As a basic, I feel like I shouldn't have to say that, but unfortunately, that's our reality today.
A basic human right, for
sure.
We have a couple minutes left. What's the bigger picture here? I know you've got some a legislative package happening. The short session's underway right now, a few more days left in it. What are you trying to see change on a societal level?
Yeah, so at the state level, we have some really important opportunities right now in the short session, which I know is about to end in a week. But there are some there's a critical moment we have right now to make state investments to protect SNAP, which again is our most effective anti-hunger program. We have to make critical investments for Oregon Department of Human Services so they can continue to administer that program. We have to do that now before other aspects of HR 1 start to get implemented. Mm-hmm. We want to see some temporary supports for those humanitarian immigrants and refugees that suddenly lost SNAP. We want to see school meals for all. We want to make sure every kid can get free breakfast, free lunch, no matter where you live in Oregon. What a convenient way to feed our kids. School meals for all. And then we want to make sure that our food assistance network, our food banks, are well invested in so we can keep the food flowing.
The short session goes quickly. Do you see some of these things happening at this session?
We are seeing really good signs that legislators are making some critical investments for our families. And of course, there will always be work to be done at the end of the day. So Oregon Food Bank will continue to work with our communities to advocate for these topics.
All right. Well, speaking about working with the communities, let's talk about the KGW Great Food Drive, which we've got great partners. You are the top of that. And then we've got other partners and also many individuals helping out to make this happen during the month of March. Tell us what you see happening so far with the food drive and what people can do to help right now.
Well, we are just so thankful. This is our 23rd year partnering with KGW Great Food Drive, and it is so important because, as I just said, the need has skyrocketed, and we unfortunately don't have enough food to feed everyone right now, and so every little bit helps. Oregon Food Bank has massive purchasing power. We purchase food by the truckload. That's more than any individual alone you or I could, right?
Right.
And so when you contribute to the KGW Great Food Drive, it means that your dollar is multiplied so that we can purchase even more food. The average gift to Oregon Food Bank is $25. So anyone can participate. And we've got over 30,000 people in Oregon contributing to Oregon Food Bank in this way.
Right.
So we really welcome people joining us. It'll help us get more food out the door at this critical time. And we're just so thankful for the partnership.
Absolutely. And food donations are great. But I hear you saying cash donations really make a difference because you can make it go so much further.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then beyond the food drive, I mean, this is a year-round thing. And you mentioned all the volunteer hours, the donating that happens throughout the year. I assume more of the same and people should be involved all the time.
Yeah, we would love to see you at our site. We've got a Beaverton location and a Portland location. People can anywhere, any ages from age 8 and up, so some kids can join us to help us repack fresh produce that allows us to buy farm fresh bins, repackage them into family-sized quantities, and we need volunteers to help us do that.
Great.
So you can sign up by going to our website, oregonfoodbank.org.
And what a great experience when you're doing that, giving back. It feels pretty good.
It's really fun, too.
Yeah, terrific. Well, Andrea Williams with the Oregon Food Bank, thank you so much for being here today, and we hope we have a great food drive throughout the month of March.
Thank you so much.
You bet. And as we close our show today, I want to take a moment to say thank you for your support of Straight Talk. This is a program I've always felt is so important for our community to explore our politics and public affairs, to have deeper conversations. It's an honor for me to be taking the host seat here, and I thank my friends, Stephanie Domerat and Laurel Porter before her, for setting the bar high. I'll do my best to keep it there, along with the great KGW team. And again, thank you for watching. Now a reminder, you can stream Straight Talk on your own schedule. Download the free TV app, KGW Plus, available now on Roku, Apple TV, and Fire TV. We will see you back here next week.